What I'd like to do is offer something of a cross-cultural perspective tonight. When I first saw Body Worlds in 2001, it was in Berlin. It was a subject of huge controversy throughout Europe. In England, it was challenged by the British Medical Association and by parents' groups. In Germany, by religious organizations. The city of Munich allowed the display only when some of the more controversial plastinates were removed. You can put on the Spiegel. I'll show you the cover of Der Spiegel, which is more or less the equivalent to Time or Newsweek, that will stylize von Hagens as Dr. Death. A spokesperson for the Berlin Jewish community commented, "I am stunned that such an exhibition can take place. It may be the logical consequence of things that have happened in the 20th century." As Mary Faith already alluded, the 2000 film Anatomy also links the plastinates fictitiously but explicitly with Nazi atrocities. And allegedly, Nobel laureate Günter Grass, the writer, has referred to von Hagens as another Josef Mengele. Mengele, you may recognize, was one of the infamous Nazi doctors in concentration camps. So I was astonished when Body Worlds opened throughout the U.S. and here to, as far as I could tell, basically no controversy or protest. It took a visit last week to the Science Museum for me to understand why. Namely, this Body Worlds seemed like a new show, different from the one I'd seen in Berlin. So what was different? First of all, the venue. In Europe, Body Worlds has generally been displayed in large warehouses and exhibition halls, the kind of place you'd go to the Home and Garden Show. In Hamburg, 2003, the show appeared at a former erotic art museum on the Reeperbahn, which is the city's red light district. There were press slogans like "Ultra Naked, Uncensored." In Brussels, it was staged in a converted slaughterhouse and meat market. In the United States, by contrast, the show has been hosted by vastly more prestigious institutions, not only our Science Museum, but Chicago's Museum of Science and Industry, Cleveland's Great Lakes Science Center, and LA's California Science Center. Second, the look of the show. In Berlin, and you can go to the next photo, Berlin Body Worlds was set, this is actually Cologne, I think, but it was set in a giant room in which the sculptures were immersed in a bright light and adorned only by a few green plants. In St. Paul, unfortunately I don't have an image of this, but since everybody in the upper Midwest has been, I'll rely on your memory. The exhibition is dramatically different, aestheticized by a chiaroscuro lighting. We walk into a black room filled with illuminated cases and sculptures. You can go to the next ones. The lighting is crucial to the effect of the exhibition, as it looks beautiful and classy, guides the eye, and invokes the lighting techniques of masters like Caravaggio or Rembrandt. Moreover, this exhibition includes a series of features absent in the European version. First of all, there are informed aids all through the museum. Reproductions of anatomical art dating back to the Middle Ages cover the walls very much, and keep going, in accordance with von Hagen's self-representation as working in a tradition of anatomical enlightenment represented by Da Vinci and Vesalius, etc. Next, written texts adorn the wall that one might divide into three categories: references to the donors, single nouns written vertically on the walls, courage, etc. 13 quotations by famous thinkers and philosophers commenting on life, death, and what constitutes humanity. The first text is from the Bible, and the final wall juxtaposes a quote from von Hagens, you can go on, with a quote by Germany's uncontested great, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Both say more or less the same thing, with the negligible difference that Goethe praises anatomy and von Hagens plastination. This juxtaposition of von Hagens with Goethe suggests at once that Hagens enjoys Goethe's canonical status, along with Descartes and Kant, etc., and that Body World would have enjoyed Goethe's stamp of approval, an implication I would venture to question, just as I wonder how Goethe would feel if he knew that his words adorn the back of a postcard we can submit if we're interested in submitting our bodies for plastination. What I want to emphasize is the overwhelming power of context in guiding how we look at body worlds or anything else. In Europe, the show had something of a side or freak show atmosphere, which may have been a cause or a result of the controversy, which of course is historically overdetermined. Think of Germany, obviously. It seems to me that the show has been repackaged in the U.S. to retain a populist character, but gain a mantle of solemnity and respectability, assuring us that we're witnessing a celebration of enlightenment and scientific progress. Everything here is so tasteful that it's not surprising that it occurs to almost no one that the contents of the exhibition may not be tasteful. It's too hard to resist the weighty cultural authority that is telling us how to respond. So what are some of the considerations at stake? Kirk has certainly named many, and perhaps the most widespread charge you've already heard is that Body World violates the dignity of human beings. Unquestionably, the exhibition breaks with traditions like concealing the dead from the gaze of the living. But Body World's defenders can rightly argue that there's a long tradition of displaying bodies or body parts as memento mori, and that displayed corpses, whether Lenin's or Evita's, have often been considered a form of inspiration. Dignity itself is a cultural construct that may mean one thing to one culture and something else to another. But Body Worlds itself is inconsistent. On the one hand, plastination champions take a certain pride in being pioneers of disenchantment, in stripping away our infantile illusions about ourselves, whereby von Hagen's background in East Germany may be interesting here. On the other hand, particularly as it has evolved in its Americanized, family-friendly form, Body World is anything but demythologizing. The show may subvert tradition in practice of plastination, but not in its discourse. Its visual and verbal language, in fact, is overdetermined by the dignity argument. It covertly responds by saying, "No, we're all about your dignity. How can we not be with all these great philosophers talking and with a picture of Rembrandt on the wall?" The exhibition is ideologically inflected with the tradition of humanism, and a conservative one at that. Many commentators, journalists, and others have noticed the gender politics, for example, of the exhibition. There's the vast majority of the plastinates are male, and the female, and they tend to be coded gender. The men are virile, and the women are, you know, having babies, etc. The quotations are also all male. This conservative humanist message invokes a spectator identification in a variety of ways. The first is a negative identification. Soon after entering, we meet the smoker with his tarred lungs. Hence, any guilt we may feel at corpse gazing is assuaged by a smoker's pedagogical value. He frightens me. He could be me. But even so, he elevates me by telling me I need not be him. He presumes the autonomy of the human subject and fits into the discourse of lifestyle choices, to which I'll return. A different and more positive kind of identification is elicited by the exhibition's other predominant theme, the idealization of bodily perfection that is reinforced by the isolated nouns on the walls, faith, compassion, justice, etc., whereby one wonders what happened to lust, greed, sadism, violence, and indeed voyeurism. We don't see old, bent, or fat bodies. Almost half the plastinates are athletes, so again, sequencing is important as we progress in a teleological manner from the smoker, the negative model of what we might be, to a final room occupied by the blocking goalkeeper, the archer, the balance beam gymnast, etc., etc., idealistic models of what we'd like to, but probably never will be. Of course, one can argue that using sports to demonstrate bodily function makes perfect sense. Nonetheless, This choice of bodies and postures is not without its cultural implications, particularly in light of the vast underrepresentation of cognitive activities in body worlds. The teacher, for example, is one of just two wimpy brainiacs, albeit one whose brain is largely absent as he pedantically points his chalk at the visitor. You can go on. The idealization of the human body was a major tenet of Nazi art. Oh, yeah, just go on. It's, yeah, there's Leni Riefenstahl's famous movie Olympia, 1937, of the 1936 Olympics. And Nazi art privileged sculpture. You can go on. The next is, this is Arno Breker, the premier sculptor of Nazism. It was privileged above all other art forms for its ability to capture Aryan perfection. Nazism celebrated an unachievable body untouched by the stigma of decay or degeneration, and aesthetic historians link with the murderous policies aimed at eliminating the unfit. Now, I'm far from asserting that von Hagen's aesthetic is fascist. His aesthetic is too complicated. He even sometimes cites Salvador Dali, etc., and so are fascist aesthetics complicated. Nonetheless, the resemblance of many plastinates to Leni Riefenstahl's or Arno Breker's Aryan ideal, combined with the instrumentalization of real human beings as raw material, gives pause. And just go on to the next two. If you remember the sculptor, I couldn't find a picture of it, the plastinate, the torch bearer, the guy who's carrying a red torch, there is a real similarity to Arno Breker's a sculpture from 1937, the torch bearer. Most relevant, however, for today are the affinities of von Hagen's aesthetic to those of consumer capitalism. I've already alluded to Body World's focus on consumer choice. And while von Hagen's turns bodies into art, we nip, tuck, and Botox ourselves. In both cases, the body is estranged, aestheticized, displayed, and commodified. Von Hagen's idealized bodies might as easily be drawn from Madison Avenue as from Leni Riefenstahl. In fact, advertising photography, you can go on, is indebted to Riefenstahl. I like the guy on the right. He seems a little unsure there. and like the advertising world, body worlds tends to represent sex and leisure working out rather than working. The notion of self-commodification is relevant to the question of body donors as well. References to the donors frame the St. Paul show. Before we go in, we read a wall homage. And afterwards, a kid-friendly computer asks, why donate your body to science? Ask the experts. Inside, we see more thank yous to the donors and enlarged reproductions of consent forms. Running through body worlds is thus a tension between the cadavers and the deceased. To think of these sculptures as people, of course, evokes an uncanny feeling. So part of the ideological maneuver of the exhibition is to invoke reverence for the cadavers as the deceased, and thus disavow titillation and close off critique either of the exhibition or of exhibitionism. The donors gain an almost messianic quality as we give thanks for the gift of learning bestowed upon us by the cost of personal tragedies by generous donors with clear vision. These are all words from the wall text. This representation is not, however, fully consistent with the form in which the donors are requested to check a list of reasons for their donation. So you see this list, and then everybody can check off the ones that apply to them. Only one reason on the list echoes the exhibition's wall text, namely the desire to give one's body to a good cause. All the other reasons listed on the donor form are self-oriented. Some are pragmatic, but I don't want to pay for a funeral, and others describe the desire to live on after death, even a euphoria in being on display. The form uses adjectives like excited and fascinated. Twice this fascinated comes up. I'm fascinated by the display, etc. Germany's newspaper Die Zeit reports that in interviews, donors report a desire for a life after death that is happier than in life itself. As Megan Stern puts it, plastination is a uniquely secular material form of immortality. Body Worlds is, quite literally, a consumer heaven. Now, it's one thing to give your organs so somebody else may live, and quite another thing to allow your body to be appropriated as a work of art produced and signed by a living artist to be reincarnated as Günther von Hagen's smoker in Günther von Hagen's body world. And he's, you know, certainly become a superstar. Check out the book you can buy in the store called Pushing the Limits. It is a hagiography written by all his friends, including his imprisonment in Germany. So he stylized as a freedom fighter. You can go on with it. Yeah, there's an image of the prison he was in and an article by his second wife. And if there is nothing new in the display and the aesthetic reconfiguring of bodies, there is something new in this particular form of commercial and auteurist appropriation of somebody as somebody. The fact that the donors agreed to be part of this, wanted it, is precisely what we need to be discussing, and not whether von Hagen's is a grave robber, which would be creepy and illegal but hardly debatable. People, we may remember, also want to estrange their bodies by appearing on Extreme Makeover or The Swan. They want to be on Big Brother or humiliated on American Idol. In a flip moment, I considered calling my talk Strike a Pose, There's Nothing to It. So I've tried to stress what Body World is not. It is not a neutral, value-free, cold, scientific look at the human body solely for purposes of education. It presents a constructed and manipulated view of humanity, just as it presents a simulacrum of the human body. Behind it is an agent, a kind of god, and a business venture. The advantage of a circus-like Berlin show, you can go to the last image, over our local show is that its lack of aesthetic choreography, its blatant recollection of yesterday's freak shows, frees us up to draw our own conclusions. I hope that we may not be intimidated by taste, sacrifice, and an uncritical reverence for science, because none of these things exists in a vacuum, as an egregious case like National Socialism makes obvious. What's at stake is not vilifying body worlds, but being aware of its implications with respect to cultural legacies and cultural shifts. One of the exhibition's own wall quotes from philosopher Immanuel Kant makes the point, quote, that man can be conscious of himself in his contemplation, raises him infinitely above all creatures on earth. In other words, we need to think about what we think.